Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by speaking with Jonathan and Fifilia Nez, the former president and first lady of the Navajo Nation. Several years ago, when Jonathan Nez was 300 pounds, he was encouraging Navajo children to take care of themselves and exercise. A young person called him out, basically saying he wasn't practicing what he was preaching. And that began Jonathan Nez's transition to a plant-based diet, which helped him to lose 100 pounds and regain his health. Native Americans have high rates of obesity, diabetes, and other chronic diseases, largely due to colonization. On today's show, we'll learn more about the Nez's food justice work and efforts to reverse and prevent chronic disease in Indian country. Jonathan Nez's story is featured in the documentary Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate. In this clip, you will hear from Jonathan Nez, Jensen Yazzie, a vegan photographer, Kim Mose, a doctor with the Northern Navajo Medical Center, Roberto Nutolias, executive director of the NIHECA, and Doreen Sullivan, a diabetes health technician with the Indian Health Service. Here is a clip from Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate.
And you can see the influence of the fast food industry in this community. We see it affecting everyday life. Yeah, I haven't seen a billboard that says this is where you can go for fruits and vegetables.
For the entire Navajo Nation, there's a total of only 9 grocery stores. And 90% of the store is prepackaged food. Twice a month, we drive 3 hours all the way to Durango, Colorado, to get fresh food.
So the main thing, I have a lot of patients that their main source of food is usually like a gas station convenience store, which maybe will have like 1 or 2 bananas and an apple and that's it, and the rest is all packaged foods.
We were forced on reservation. Our food systems were decimated. So that was the start of the health crisis of our people.
They gave us flour. They gave us canned food, canned meat. And then that really put us over the edge of being obese, not healthy anymore.
They gave us government rations, flour, lard, processed foods, cheeses. To this day, that community food program is still in place.
My family was just taught to take what was there. I guess you could say what was handed to us from the government. You think these things are okay and they're not.
High rates of diabetes, heart disease, cancer.
On the Navajo Nation, definitely our rates of being overweight and obesity are increasing in all age groups. And we currently have an active register of 8,000 patients with type 2 diabetes.
But today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to give you some of the weapons to fight off diabetes, cardiovascular disease.
The Nebich Inyat Food Summit is all about re-educating people about what they eat.
That is a clip from the short documentary Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate. And you can find a link to that documentary at kalw.org, click news, and then Your Call. Today, we are happy to be joined by Jonathan Nez and Fifilia Nez. Jonathan Nez is former president of the Navajo Nation and co-founder of Nez Consulting. Hi, Jonathan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Rose. Thank you for having us on your show.
Great to have you. Fifilia Nez is former First Lady of the Navajo Nation, board member of the Best Friends Animal Society, and co-founder of Nez Consulting. Hi, Fifilia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Rose.
Well, huge thanks to both of you for the important work that you do. Jonathan, I want to start off with you. Can you take us back to that day when you were encouraging Navajo children to take care of themselves and exercise? Right. And then a young person called you out, basically saying you're walking the talk.
Right. And, you know, our young people, they'll tell you the truth. Let me just start back. I grew up in a very rural community, no running water or electricity. We had livestock. We were very active. I was in sports in high school and
You know, once I went off to college, it was a different story. And then I went back after being challenged by our elders, you know, to get an education and come back with that knowledge and help the people. So I went home and we got elected into office. And, you know, I didn't take very good care of myself through those years, you know, driving 3-4 hours one way to a meeting and back. The only place to get food was at the gas station and the fast food restaurants. And, you know, I gained a lot of weight. But at the same time, you know, I was elected leader, so I was out in the communities encouraging people. And one of those was, you know, telling people to take better care of themselves, you know, and especially the young people. And I was at a youth conference, you know, challenging them. I say, hey, please be active, exercise, and eat good foods. But they looked at me and I was over 300 pounds and they're like, okay, this doesn't make sense. He's one of our leaders. He's telling us, encouraging us to do, take care, better care of our bodies, but yet he's not doing it. I'm sure that was the perception. And then one day a young person stood up and said, Mr. Nez, you know, and they saw me transition to getting over 300 pounds because I was in the communities a lot. And he said, we've seen you over time just get bigger and bigger. And, you know, what's up with that? And, you know, of course, as I mentioned, the young people tell the truth. And at first it hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. But after a while, I realized, you know what, I need to walk the talk, and started my transformation in health and wellness. Started walk, run. Next thing you know, I was running ultra marathons and became a vegan. As was mentioned in the documentary, you know, and you know, to this day, I think with what we went through in our experience in government helped me really to govern a nation through a pandemic, mm-hmm. and also put some of those practices, health and wellness practices, into policy and law. You know, first ever junk food tax was approved on the Navajo Nation, and to this day, that is our passion, health and wellness in Indian country.
It's really an incredible story. It's really difficult for people to make these changes because this food is so addicting. And then when you talk about, for example, you and others in the film talk about how hard it is on the Navajo Nation to even get access to fresh fruits and vegetables. Can you walk us through your transformation? Where did you start? How did you do it?
Well, let me have Fafilia talk about that, because I think there was a big shock when I came home, you know, wanting to change my own lifestyle. But as your listeners may know, it's a family change that needs to occur. Fafilia?
Right. So this was when Jonathan was still a council delegate. And so one day my elder son and I, we were at home. He comes back in late afternoon and comes and basically went through our whole kitchen pantry. I mean, every cabinet and whatever was processed item, all the sodas, chips, meat, dairy, all of those items went into the trash can. And that was our introduction, I guess, when we asked, you know, why? What is this all about? And then he proceeded to, instead of sitting there and just verbally telling us, he had us watch videos and showing, you know, just how these, all those items, how they're produced. And then when you consume it, how it affects your body, you know, just in the short term, immediately. And then of course, over the long term. And that was my first, just the beginning of my education into the whole, just why nutrition and foods is so, that's something we should just create a lot of awareness about. And of course, you talked about prevention of chronic diseases. That's, I'm always on the prevention and early intervention side of everything. And so that just really had me hooked from that point on.
How has that affected you, Fafilia, and your family? Because again, this is a major transition that you all made personally, And now you're doing so much advocacy work around this to bring chronic diseases down and then ultimately to prevent chronic disease.
Yes. So I grew up even more remote, I think, than where Jonathan grew up. And I remember never, it wasn't us who ever went to the grocery store or, you know, a lot of what we ate was produced just at home or from the neighbors. And so I never really grew up eating food from, you know, just like restaurants or gas stations or anything like that. And so, but it wasn't until I went off to, you know, when you're in high school, when you're in college, that's when I think you get exposed to a lot of those items. So I went through my 20s, my 30s, and it wasn't until I got to my, no, that was in our 30s, you know, and it took just that many decades to even get in the mindset of questioning, okay, why am I consuming this? Why is it, you know, really questioning the foods that we do have access to? You know, who determines these items and, you know, what we ate at school, what we ate at our, you know, even in our homes and just everywhere I've ever been. And then, of course, then you think about, hey, wait, you have choices. And by the time you're an adult and looking at different institutions, the policy making behind, you know, just the foods that we have access to, then I think it really does challenge you to become an advocate and get involved.
And Jonathan, can you talk about how regaining your health has affected your advocacy? Because we've been talking about on the show how chronic disease and cancer are just sadly on the rise in this country. And at this time, people really need to be active for so many reasons in their community at all levels of government. And yet it's really hard to be active when you're sick. It's hard to be active when you're caring for someone. So can you talk about how regaining your health has really affected your level of advocacy and those around you?
Well, I think being the vice president, the former vice president and the former president of the Navajo Nation, you know, you have a big platform. You're able to talk about issues that are affecting our people. And of course, with what Fafilia mentioned in terms of health and wellness, we were able to, if you want to say, re-educate our people about our indigenous foods, right? I mean, when folks came across this country, there were first peoples here. Of course, if there's first people here, there were the first foods here as well. And it gives us an opportunity to share with the rest of the country, you know, those indigenous foods and the contributions of Native Americans to this country. Of course, we just recently heard about the Navajo Code Talkers, you know, being erased from the government websites for this administration. But we also should be teaching everyone in this country that indigenous peoples do have indigenous knowledge that we're willing to share, you know, and food sovereignty. What we're really highlighting here today is something that tribes have been doing and trying to keep amongst their tribal communities. And, you know, just recently, we advocated for indigenous foods to be placed on the U.S. Dietary guidelines for Americans. As you know, every five years there's a discussion about what's going to end up on our plates in this country. And we had a great advocate, first ever appointed Native American, Dr. Valerie Bluebird Jernigan, who was on the advisory committee for the guidelines, and we helped give her information. I mean, the advocacy, of course, she's a professional in indigenous food sovereignty, but we were able to get tribes to support these changes, and the recommendations from those discussions have now beans, lentils to be included in the primary food group. Of course, it's a recommendation to this new administration, but you know, I think there are opportunities for indigenous knowledge to be shared throughout the country. So back to your question, you know, I think What I went through, what I've experienced, you know, people saw that in government, and we were able to make that discussion take place in the homes. You know, at one point, I banned candy to be handed out at our parades on the Navajo Nation. Man, that was radical. People call me out on it, but I explained to them that your very own government purchases tens of thousands of dollars of candy to be handed out in the communities while we have high rates of diabetes, heart disease, and cancers in our community. And what we did with the tens of thousands of dollars is we went out into the communities to our Navajo farmers. We bought produce from them, and guess what? We were handing those produce out just like we do candy at the parades. And that type of discussion was happening at the dinner table, and I think you know, people were open to, you know, re-educating their minds to our own way of life teaching in terms of health and wellness, and in this case, indigenous foods like the Three Sisters, corn, beans, and squash.
Today, we are continuing our series on cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by speaking with Jonathan and Fifilia Nez, the former president and first lady of the Navajo Nation. Several years ago, when Jonathan Nez was over 300 pounds, encouraging Navajo kids to take care of themselves and exercise, a young person called him out. And of course, he was hurt by that, but that began his transition to a plant-based diet, which helped him to lose 100 pounds and regain his health. The Nezes are doing incredible food justice work on the Navajo Nation and working to reverse and prevent chronic disease. I hope you can watch the short documentary, Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate. Find a link at your call rate, I'm sorry, KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Jonathan and Fifilia Nez are co-founders of Nez Consulting. And if you have any questions or comments for Jonathan or Fifilia, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on trying to reach people where they do not have access to fresh fruits and vegetables? And when it comes to Indian country, of course, this is directly connected to colonization and government policies. If you've been involved in this kind of work, are affected by these kinds of policies, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Fifilia, in the clip, we hear from Doreen Sullivan, a diabetes health technician with the Indian Health Service, and she's giving a talk to young people saying one of her youngest patients is 10 years old, and that child has been forever changed because they have type 2 diabetes. So how do young people respond to this message, given that young people are growing up with very little access to fruits and vegetables unless they have the means to drive many hours to a grocery store? How are you talking to young people about these issues?
You know, one of the messages that I used to give out as First Lady to all parents and grandparents used to be, you know, the most amount of impact any one of us is ever going to have is going to happen within the walls of our own home. And so again, we've been, you know, targeting adults, elders, and young people. And young people, what we know about them is they would rather hear from a peer, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's in their peer group. And so, but, and as, you know, just as a general group, the youth are very open to, you know, to listening to new messaging. And they're very much, I would say, you know, they're very open to new things, learning new things. And I think they also have a lot of critical thinking involved in making a lot of the decisions that they do. So for us, we see that as a great opportunity. And so to have them for the 10-year-old, I would say, and I mean, just based on what nutrition science, it tells us that you can be diagnosed with any of these chronic diseases and you have a chance of reversing it. if you can stick to, you know, to a very strict plan of what you consume.
Jonathan, what has really struck you about the work that you're doing around food justice issues and trying to change your diet? What has struck you based on what you've heard from young people?
Well, let me start out with the adults. You know, adults, we're kind of set in our ways. So when you talk about health and wellness, about what you should eat or to be physically active, you know, that's something personal. And sometimes some folks get offended, you know, because of having that discussion. But we would always say we have to have this discussion. Someone in our family has diabetes. Someone in our family has cardiovascular disease or cancer. Right. And if we just stay quiet, nothing's going to change. And that's why we're not only doing these initiatives on the Navajo Nation, but we're also doing it in Indian country, you know, doing it in Congress as well. like for instance, in the film, it says that, you know, we were tribal people were taken off our lands and we were exploited and put into reserves, reservations. And federal government came in, gave us rations, government rations. And believe it or not, that was the start of the food, commodity food program, the food distribution. And today it's still the same. It's the canned meats, canned beef, you know, processed foods, cheeses and milks being given to not just Native Americans, but for everybody, even communities of color. But we are pressing on the USDA and the federal government to say, hey, we want to be able, when I say we, tribes should have the ability to, you know, determine what is going to be given out in our communities. And one example is, you know, a traditional food that we have is, and it's not fry bread, it's blue corn. And now the USDA accepted blue corn, and they're being handed out to folks that are in need in our communities, you know. And we see some very good examples of that happening in other tribal communities throughout the country. And the other, lastly, is just protecting our indigenous seeds. I think indigenous foods are the most healthiest food anyone can eat because it's not genetically modified. It's pure, you know, fruits and vegetables. Those seeds have been handed down from generation to generation. But of course, people come in and try to manipulate those things. And it's no wonder today, some tribal governments, you know, don't have trust in the federal government or other organizations out there. But we are trying to change that with the help of what you're doing today, Rose, getting the message out and educating folks, re-educating our indigenous people to, you know, reinstate their own traditional knowledge when it comes to health and wellness.
Well, before we go to break, let's play another short clip from the documentary Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate. In this clip, you will hear from Jensen Yazzie, a vegan photographer, and today's guest, Jonathan Nez, former president of the Navajo Nation.
The plant-based diet changed my family. The biggest drastic change is we all look younger. I've lost, I'd say, 100 pounds. For me, health and wellness is everything. It's happiness, it's pure, it's precious.
Health and wellness, it's a very difficult subject to talk about, especially if someone's saying, you know, you need to change. But I am hopeful. It took us many generations to get obese, to get overweight, to get diabetes and all these diseases. Hopefully it doesn't take the same amount of generations to get out of it.
And that's a clip from the short documentary Navajo Nation, Reclaiming the Plate. Today we're joined by Jonathan Nez, former president of the Navajo Nation, co-founder of Nez Consulting. Fifilia Nez is former First Lady of the Navajo Nation, board member of the Best Friends Animal Society, and co-founder of Nez Consulting. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're continuing our series on cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by talking about efforts to reduce and prevent diseases in Indian country. According to the CDC, Native Americans and Alaska Native populations face much higher rates of health disparities, including chronic diseases like heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, which are the leading causes of death in this population. And we saw what happened during COVID. It was just devastating. There's a new story out from The Imprint about 2,000 Indigenous children who live in northern Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. And they lost a parent or a caregiver to COVID. It was just devastating what happened to Indian country during COVID. But so many people, like today's guests, are trying to turn this around. Jonathan Nez is former president of the Navajo Nation. Several years ago, he was talking to Navajo children and saying, you need to take care of yourselves, you need to exercise. At the time, he was over 300 pounds, and a young person called him out. And that began his transition to a plant-based diet. It helped him to lose 100 pounds and regain his health. We're also joined by Fifilia Nez, former First Lady of the Navajo Nation, board member of the Best Friends Animal Society. They are co-founders of Nez Consulting. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You know, when you look at the numbers, I wonder if this is the latest number. On the Navajo Nation, 30% of families are still living without running water. Is that the latest number, Jonathan?
Yeah, we like 30-40%. Of our,
such a shame.
Our folks don't have running water or electricity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, Rose. About 30-40% of our citizens don't have running water or electricity. But the statistics improving because of the federal support that we received in previous administration for infrastructure development. Of course, the COVID relief funds were able to expand water lines in the community, expand the electricity lines in the community. So we are hopeful that we can expand the infrastructure in our community in the next few years.
Can any of those funds be pulled by the people in D.C.?
Yes, I appreciate you saying that, Rose, because that's what's happening right now. You know, those COVID relief funds are being pulled, and we are doing everything we can to get those projects completed. But they're also closing down BIA offices, federal offices right now, and it's making it very difficult for us to get the needed documents to get these projects completed. So, of course, I'm not in government, but I hear some updates about what's happening on the Navajo Nation. But again, you just got to be hopeful that, you know, we're able to help out our citizens, not just here, but all across the country. That's what's happening.
Right. And Fifilia, you know, going back to this question about why this issue is so important. If you have, for example, in the Navajo Nation, 30% of families do not have running water and electricity, the activism and advocacy is so incredibly important, but it's really hard when you're sick. It's hard when your grandma's sick. It's hard when you lose your parent. So this work is so important to empower people to be healthy, to be able to have what it takes to stay active, especially under the Trump administration that's slashing and burning so many programs. So can you talk about why it really has to start with health in order for people to stay active in their communities?
Yes. So one of the things that we've always, had a vision for is to see healthy communities, healthy homes, and just healthy tribal nations. And we absolutely do agree that that comes with, at an individual level, at a family, you know, just a family level, really looking at our health in a holistic fashion. And so for us, I think this nutrition piece has just become such an important piece to it. I mean, one of the things that Jonathan had us do when he was the president was for the whole office, for president, vice president. There was, I think most or almost everyone in the office, we opted to do the 21-day vegan challenge. And then, of course, some of us got hooked on it. And, you know, and for me, you know, it went on to, you know, the Navajo Nation for Department of Health. One of the partners that they had was an organization called Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And it's partners like them who come with the information, who share that, and who bring in resources into the community to educate, to, you know, and for me, it was one of their programs, Food for Life. You go through a whole series on, you know, how to prepare foods, and it's the recipes, right? And then, of course, you get into finding all the ingredients and how do you get those or how do you modify these things. And so a lot of it for me is it comes back down to modeling it, I think, in the home. So for Jonathan and I, you know, he was the one who got us all started. And then there was a little, you know, it took me a while to get on board. But then, of course, kids being kids, you know, our sons, they were still young at the time. But the older one now, who's in high school, he went the entire summer of last year, Whole Foods plant-based.
Wow.
And he just wanted to do it for the summer. Well, actually started off for a month. He's like, no, I still want to enjoy food like July 4th, right? But then it extended on into the entire summer. And when fall came, he ended up staying on it. And I think he realized over the course of that time, you know, he feels it. He has a lot more energy. He has, you know, his complexion, like all these things that he attributes to staying on, you know, just staying with it. And so I think when it comes to, but of course he also understands, you know, just how a lot of things are, a lot of the foods that we see in groceries are, you know, how they're produced. And when you have that understanding, and then of course with the whole nutrition science to back, you know, why you should be eating that and sticking to that plan instead of going back to something that might set you up for any of these chronic diseases. He does not want that. And now he has his friends, you know, they get curious as to why don't you like pizza and, you know, just things like that. And now he is in the position of sharing and educating others. And so, yeah, it's just, there are organizations out there, even in the physicians arena. You know, one thing that we found about physicians is they don't have enough nutrition education, but there are plant-based doctors. And so that's kind of what we've been, you know, we've been finding more partners. And I think it's just going to take a lot of work to get the word out there. And it's, you know, and it is a lot of work.
And it's also so important, Jonathan, in past interviews, you have made the argument that Indigenous foods are the healthiest produce that we can have. You say Indigenous people were mostly plant-based as a people. Mm-hmm. They would only eat wild game without other things in the meat. Today, that is not the case with slaughterhouses and the antibiotics that are used. So can you talk about that? Because I know that in the vegan community, there's been some tension between, you know, vegans and Indigenous people.
Right. Well, you know, plant-based and vegan, you know, the plant-based saying that you would only eat, you know, fruits and vegetables. So if we go to the supermarket, yeah, we'll purchase fruits and vegetables. But a lot of those fruits and vegetables are genetically modified. You know, and Indigenous fruits and vegetables are not. Nobody messes with the genes there because it's handed down from one generation to the next. Of course, you know, it's always a touchy subject with the food industry and the food lobby. But at the end of the day, it's the choice of the consumer. So we not only have to reclaim our plate, we got to reclaim our homes. And, you know, that's what I did as a father in the household. Very radical, yes, But I went and said, you know, we got to change for the better. And one of the things that I showed, and, you know, this segment is only an hour, but your listeners out there are documentaries out there that talk a little bit more about, you know, the medicines and the pharmaceutical industry. And some of those documentaries like What the Health or Forks Over Knives, Game Changers, you know, Cowspiracy, Eating You Alive, you know, those types of segments, sitting down with your family members and showing them how their food is produced. You know, I know I showed it to our boys, and they found out how chicken, you know, was raised and how much medicine, antibiotics go into the chicken, where, you know, even pus was coming out in one segment. And it really grossed out a lot of people. And I think that is what is hidden from the folks throughout this country. And if they, you know, if we educate them a little bit more on how their foods are developed, or how the meats are, the animals that are raised for meats, you know, I think they'll take a second look at, you know, what they eat. Mm.
On today's Your Call, we're talking about using traditional plant foods to prevent disease in Indian country. We're joined by Jonathan and Fifilia Nez, former president and first lady of the Navajo Nation. They are doing incredible work in Indian country to raise awareness about traditional plant-based eating and preventing chronic disease in Indian country. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Jim in San Rafael. Hi, Jim. Thanks for holding.
Oh, sure. First of all, I just want to say it warms my heart so much to hear the Nez folks speak about nutrition and consciousness of eating. I'm a naturopathic doctor, but before, for about 40 years, but before that, in the 70s, I was working on an Indian reservation, helping them develop Indian curriculum. They were one of the first schools in the country to, at least in Montana, in most of the country, to take control of their school district. At one point, I started getting interested in nutrition. I had no experience in nutrition or anything much to do with health. But I took a look at what people were eating, and it's exactly as your guests have said. The food commodity program was a disaster. It was white bread, white flour, white sugar, white rice, and soup, and many of the people were very poor, and so soup would consist of bacon grease and white rice and salt. And so at one point, I'm a privileged white person from the East, and I tried to interest them in growing sprouts. I did it with about three or four families, and it was a resounding failure. They looked at the sprouts, and they thought they looked like worms, would have nothing to do with it. But 5 years later, I went back and they were growing sprouts in the school. Hmm. I don't know how long that lasted, but I guess a question is, what is being done to engage children to grow things in their own home that are manageable, even in the middle of unavailability. In the reservation I was on, it was 30 miles to the nearest vegetable. Right. And I'm sure it's a lot more. So is there any program or any work being done to encourage people to grow things at home, and especially simple things like sprouts or something that can grow without much water, without much anything?
Well, thank you, Jim. Yes, Jonathan and Fifilia are working on programs like that. Jonathan?
Well, thank you, Rose, and thank you, Jim, for that question. You know, just recently, working with other organizations, Fifilia mentioned the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, an organization called La Planta. We have been bringing in fresh produce into the communities. You know, matter of fact, last Friday we had a produce distribution in the heart of the Navajo Nation. You know, getting vegetables, fruits, you know, like salads, and you know, it was mentioned that there are only nine grocery stores on the Navajo Nation. And the Navajo Nation is as large as the state of West Virginia. Now, compare how many supermarkets are in West Virginia. I don't know, but I think it's more than nine. Hmm. But bringing in fresh produce, of course, because of processed foods, because of fast foods, our taste buds are not the same, you know? That's why I think a lot of our young people today may not like fruits and vegetables because of, you know, what foods we eat as we're growing up. But what we want to do is reintroduce, you know, fruits and vegetables into the community. So, you know, get our taste buds back. And the other thing that we challenge organizations, you know, most of these organizations come off the nation, our tribal nation, and come in to help. You know, we appreciate the help, but we also want them to empower citizens. And what we're wanting to do next is, we did this during the COVID pandemic, is to hand out our legacy seeds with the fruits and vegetables and, you know, and challenge our people to grow their own food. And we want to challenge the outside organizations to do the same, not just come in and just give free produce, but also to leave an empowerment component to the citizens by re-educating. I always say re-educating because it's inherent. We, as you mentioned, Rose, you know, we were plant-based, really, when we were farming, gardening, and then we lost that because, as you said, colonialization, all the outside influences, and now it's time that we reclaim our plate and exercise our ability to govern ourselves, exercise our sovereignty.
Well, thank you again for the question, Jim. We have a question for our listener who writes, this is also affecting Native people living in cities, not Native people on the res, and obviously so many communities of color. How can we reach them without sounding preachy or self-righteous? Fafilia, what are your thoughts?
Natives and cities. You know what? We've recently transitioned, I think, to that definition. But you know what we found out is, I think if you're in a city where you have access to a lot more of those ingredients that I was saying earlier about doing plant-based recipes, you'll have, you know, you have access to that. And of course, there's technology infrastructure to really convene people and to, you know, to reach them. And I think there definitely is room, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it is easier, but of course, more challenging in the sense that you're surrounded with a lot more tempting items. So, but I think when you bring in the education, and you do it the right way and, you know, different formats to reach different populations. It's, you know, it's something that's doable. But one of the other things that I always say is, you know, people will take this information and most of the time, some will be, they're like, no, I think I'm gonna go back to eating what I want. But I think when it comes to a crisis situation, they remember it. They're like, hey, I heard about this. I'm going to go and seek out those resources and see if it's something that could help me or somebody that's in their family.
Right. Well, thank you for that. We have another email from a listener who says, very interesting show. I was hoping you could ask the guests for specific recipes using Native American ingredients and specifically what they might eat for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Right. I'll take a stab at that. I mean, I just mentioned earlier the blue corn meal. You know, blue corn meal is, you know, not just breakfast, but, you know, eating that, we would take the corn, the blue corn, grind it up into a powder flour type and make it into a mush, which is very delicious. One of the things that people, scientists or whoever, experts, you know, would say, well, where do, you know, folks that are lactose intolerant get, you know, the nutrition like calcium and all? And we have had Native American professionals, we're becoming lawyers, we're becoming doctors, physicians, and they're rewriting a lot of the, you know, the research out there and researching new things. One of the things that has been very surprising is we put juniper ash into our blue corn meal. And you know, we burn it, we put it in there. And our Native scholars did more research on that and found out that the juniper ash actually has calcium. And that was what Indigenous people or Native Americans were getting, Navajos were getting in their fill of calcium without any milk or any dairy products. And so a lot of, you know, what is on our plates in Indigenous communities is different. You know, for the Southwest tribes, we have the three sisters, right? Corn, beans, and squash. And even that alone is a filling meal and very delicious. You know, up in the Northwest, you know, they do salmon, they do acorn into their dishes as well. And to get more information, you can visit our social media pages. Our handle is at former Nez, or I'm sorry, former Prez Nez, that Prez with a Z, Nez. And then also, you know, like Native American chefs like Sean Sherman, you know, you know, they're doing some great Indigenous food plates. And then my wife mentioned the Food for Life on the Physicians Community for Responsible Medicine website, which has a Native American segment to it. And they actually have, I think they still have on that website, when she was the first lady, her favorite dish as well, that, you know, you can, there's a recipe there that you can emulate at the home.
Speaking of dairy, we're almost out of time, but Jonathan, you wrote a piece in Stat in January, how Native Americans are working to improve federal dietary guidelines. And you write that milk, cheese, and other dairy products were never part of our tradition. Dairy is a European custom. You know, I'm sure a lot of people don't know this or maybe don't think about it. You point to a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showing that 70 to 90% of people of African, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American descent are lactose intolerant.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yet, you know, it's a lot of food programs out there push dairy products, you know, cheeses. And we wonder why, you know, in communities of color or in Native American communities, high rates of diabetes and heart disease, cancers, you know, over time that has wreaked havoc on our people. And it's back to re-educating our folks and your caller or your the person who asked the question about being preachy. See, that's what I mean. You know, this is a very delicate subject to talk about, you know, and people do get offended when we talk about these things, and they'll say, hey, you know, you got no business in my home or telling me what to do or what to eat. But at the same time, if we look into our family lineage, we have some, you know, health ills in our family. And in order for us to change that, is we're going to have to talk about that. Talk about what's in our supermarkets and what is ailing us. And this is a great segment, a great interview to be on to raise that awareness. And, you know, there are resources in tribal community, I mean, in cities, I'm sorry. We were just on at a conference, the Arizona Food Network, a couple of days ago, talking about what we're doing. And of course, having others share what they're doing in the cities, like the Gila River Indian Community, which is right next door to the metropolitan Phoenix area. some of those tribal members that live in the big city are planting gardens at a nearby tribal reservation. So there are great resources that are available, of course. We just need to get that information out to folks.
Exactly, especially right now, because so much is happening in D.C. with the Trump administration just slashing and burning so many important programs. And it's hard to lose sight of this good work that's happening and also lose sight of the fact that this is a very political issue when we're talking about health. I mean, we're losing too many people, and a lot of it has to do with politics. Fafilia, in our final minute, what else do you want listeners to know about the work that you're all doing, the programs that are happening out there that deserve more attention?
You know, there's just a lot of people out there. You know, they have this knowledge and they implement it in their own personal lives, not necessarily share it in their professional lives. And I think when you're working outside the government sector, there is, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now. And I think that allows us to partner with others that operate in the same space. And, you know, it gives us the opportunity to go out and connect with other entities that serve, you know, for us, it's always been tribal communities, but really we're talking about the general public, right? Mm-hmm. Across the entire United States, the data is probably pretty much the same. But I mean, if you're looking at tribal communities, we just have higher rates of all these items. And right. So, but really just to tell people, you know what, you need to really just go back to simple foods and simple eating.
Oh, yes. You don't simple need foods massive, and simple eating.
Yes. We don't need massive heaps of food on our plates. You know,
such an important message. And we'd love to have you back. A lot of people are emailing us saying thank you for your important work. Fafilia and Jonathan Nez, former First Lady and President of the Navajo Nation. And be sure to watch the documentary Navajo Nation Reclaiming the Plate. Thank you both for your work. And thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.